Hello, everybody. You are listening to Limited Playtime, the board game podcast where we talk about board game things in 30 minutes or less.
Or the next episode is free.
I'm Kyle Bolin.
And I'm Jason Cavallari.
And if you have listened to the podcast before, perhaps you just recognize that we did a different intro. That is not an accident.
Well, kind of.
We're bored of board game reviews.
It's true. They've become a little tedious.
Yeah. We're really not sure how useful it is for the crowd that listens to this podcast. Maybe it is. If you're listening to this podcast, you must be doing so for a reason. But we have kind of been hitting a wall on games that we can and are interested in reviewing in this format. And Jason and I kind of talked and we're like, why don't we try doing something a little different for a little while, at least? Why don't we try just doing some topical conversation? We kind of bounced around some other ideas, but this is the one that we're going to try out tonight. So Jason had the idea of having just a little conversation about crowdfunding, meaning like using platforms like Kickstarter or GameFound to fund board game development and publishing and then deliver it to consumers. It is a practice that has been going on for probably close to 10 years now. And seems pretty embedded into the board game space, the board game community. I think board games are one of the biggest things, if not the biggest things, on Kickstarter in terms of like the amount of revenue they bring in. Mm. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like that's something that I've read or heard about before. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal in terms of like, you know, like as a consumer getting your hands on games, you kind of can't do it without going to crowdfunding if you want all the new hottest stuff. So, Jason, what was your proposal as far as our conversation about Kickstarter and crowdfunding in general?
Well, I mean, I kind of came at it from the perspective of thinking about whether or not it's sort of like what impact it has had on board game design and production and retailing, essentially. And whether or not sort of on the whole that can be qualified as either a good thing or a bad thing or just a different thing.
We're reviewing Kickstarter today.
I guess. Well, I mean, it's not just Kickstarter. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's sort of any kind of crowdfunding
Crowdfunding
thing.
In general.
Yeah.
I think the caveat here is we are not publishers. We are not designers. We don't have a designer or a publisher or anybody that has published on Kickstarter on our podcast right now. So this is just you and me kind of speculating as far as like what their perspective or their experience would be, but we can speak to our experience as consumers on the other end of the crowdfunding and how crowdfunding has impacted our perception of board game design, board game publishing, board game delivery, right? Compared to the traditional retail model.
Right. And we certainly are no strangers to using these. Like,
no.
We have bought quite a few products off of Kickstarter.
Quite a few, yes.
Right, yeah. So we do, you know, and we've been doing it for a while. So, and I think both of us have seen some kind of evolution in how these things work from when we first started exploring the platform to now.
I'm pretty sure the first game I kickstarted was in 2015. No, I think it was 2016. I think it was right after we played God's War at Gen Con. Because I came, Cthulhu Wars. Yeah, because that's when I kickstarted the God's War after that.
That was the first thing you kickstarted?
It might have been the first board game. It wasn't the first thing I kickstarted. I had kickstarted a couple of other things earlier on. Like, I was one of the people that kickstarted Star Citizen in, like, 2012 or 2011 or whatever.
Is that the one you're still waiting for?
The one that I keep saying is, like, a money laundering scheme, yeah.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, I've been kickstarting board games since at least 2016 and maybe 2015, and it just kind of snowballed, you know? Like, you do one, and especially back then, which I guess this is, we'll just get into the points we're going to make, like, it was a very attractive proposition back then when it was still relatively new and maybe just getting popular among consumers, because I think that around 2015, 2016, what we were seeing was some games that looked really interesting that probably would not have seen the light of day without the crowdfunding there to bring it to life, because a, you know, like typical board game publisher would not have necessarily taken a risk on something like Spirit Island, right? Or like Cthulhu Wars, right?
Yeah.
These like maybe something that is like an untested idea from an untested designer, or perhaps something that is just like so over lavishly produced, like Cthulhu Wars or the Gods War, that it would be, you'd have to be crazy as a publisher to decide to like produce that and
right,
ship it over from China and everything. So Kickstarter was a method of getting those things developed and produced and delivered. It also, as a consumer, was very attractive because around that time, I know, is when I started seeing a massive amount of stretch goals that they added into all these different crowdfunding campaigns where instead of just getting like a base game, you would end up getting, you know, like two or three extra boxes of stuff, whether that was figures, minis, you know, like additional levels for something that might have a campaign in it, additional monsters to choose from with like something like Cthulhu Wars,
upgraded
right? Like
components.
Yeah, upgraded components, sure. And so the attractiveness of all of these campaigns, and this is why we talk about FOMO being a major thing, fear of missing out, because it really started to develop, I think, around that time when the amount of stuff or the, you know, the quality of the stuff even was so attractive, and you oftentimes would only have an opportunity to get some of those things if you got them through the crowdfunding source because they were exclusive to the Kickstarter or they're
right.
exclusive to the,
yeah.
the crowdfunding campaign.
That's one of the things that started me on it was that I saw there were some games that had been published on Kickstarter that I had missed out on and I couldn't get them. Like there was no way to buy them retail unless I went to like eBay or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's one of the reasons why it started out to be a very attractive thing because of those reasons. But as time has gone on, I feel like some of that has changed. It's maybe some of it is still true. There are still some games that are only going to get published if they go through crowdfunding source, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are. So, I mean, like there's plenty of games that are coming out that I would be excited about. And I'm not sure a major publisher would have picked them up and published those games. So,
right,
like,
yeah.
There is still value to be had with crowdfunding for sure. But that said, my perception has changed because as time has gone on, number one, with all of that extra stuff and exclusive stuff, there seems to be less and less of it as time has gone on. We talked a little bit about this before we started recording, that like the amount of things that you get, like the extra stretch goals, it seems like those have shrank over the last several years, and you're getting like just fewer things per dollar. And that sounds kind of petty because it is, right? I mean, it's just like, oh, I got less plastic, I am upset, you know? But, you know, it may be a petty, meaningless thing, but it was just, you know, like it was the toy in the Cracker Jack box or whatever. Like it was that extra incentive to get you to go and do it.
But did you notice that happening before the pandemic and all the sort of supply chain stuff and whatnot?
I'm not sure. It's a good question, you know?
Yeah.
I want to say I think it started before then, but I don't have any hard evidence. Like, I didn't do the research to say, you know, like, this is what was being promised prior to 2020, and this is what's being promised afterwards. But it's entirely – I mean, it would be silly for us to sit here and say that supply chain issues and delivery costs have not affected the amount of things, like the net weight of a product that is being produced at this point in time, right? Like, I think it would be
and
naive
the, and
to
the
say
length that.
That
you have to wait for a product.
Yeah, that's true too. But anyway, I mean, all of those things have changed, and so the appeal of kickstarting something for all that content, I think, has become reduced, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm now not as quick to jump on every Kickstarter that looks really attractive, just because, you know, there's all this stuff coming out of the Kickstarter, because I can assume that if that stuff's available through the Kickstarter, it's not going to be exclusive anymore. A lot of these things have started becoming like non-exclusive. Like you can get it in the store, you can get it off the publisher's website once it finally comes to retail.
Yeah,
or it's part of the retail product.
I mentioned this to you before we started recording that, you know, more often than not these days, Kickstarter or any other crowdfunding platform, more often for board games, at least, seems like a pre-ordering system rather than sort
entirely
of like a funding innovation kind of system.
Yeah, and you mentioned this too. It's expected that there's going to be a whole lot of content for that product coming kind of all at once now, right?
Yeah,
and whereas before that was just like a bunch of bonus stuff and not necessarily, you know, like the first full expansion to a game, somehow we've crept into this territory of like one or two or three or four or five or six or seven expansions all being produced for that game while it's in production for the Kickstarter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying, why don't you talk about it? You were talking about how, you know, like perhaps the quality of the like, you know, perpetual development of the game has right, dipped yeah. as a result.
Yeah, this is just one of the things I was thinking about in regards to this is that, you know, say that there was a designer or a publisher or something that published a game not with crowdfunding, just sort of like a normal, you know, we play tested this and, you know, whatever, and here's our product, and they give you like a base game. And then, it gets out into like an actual sizable player base and you get some feedback and it goes through this cycle, right? So people will play it for a while and then maybe they lose interest after like 6 months or something. And then the expansion cycle sort of helped with that. Like they would release a new expansion, get people back interested into the game. And maybe this expansion, you know, iterates on some of the original game's contents or rules or whatever in a meaningful way that it changes the game and keeps it fresh. Or even maybe fixes issues that they didn't see when they first playtested and promoted and sold the thing. And so there's this sort of, the development time is stretched out over this this expansion cycle. Whereas where we see on Kickstarter or something similar, you get all these sort of expansions sort of packaged into the initial thing. You're sort of buying into like a completed product that, or at least from the producer's viewpoint, is a completed product that they're gonna, you know, sell, and that's pretty much gonna be the end of it. Maybe they'll come out with another expansion in a couple of years or something, but...
They will.
Right, well, to be able to, like, milk more out of it. Yeah. But, for all intents and purposes, I generally speaking, those expansions that come out don't really tinker with any of the core game in any kind of dramatic or meaningful fashion.
I think on average that's true, right? There's exceptions, there's exceptions to everything we're talking about today,
sure,
obviously.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, that does kind of feel like what it is, right? It feels like these are just like minor tweaks on the existing content for the game often, like this character now has a 3 in this spot instead of a 4, like those sorts of things.
Right.
It often feels like that's kind of what you're getting with the additional content or, like the quote unquote expansions that come out in a Kickstarter game, a Kickstarted game. But
yeah.
But yeah, like just thinking about how designers could take a little bit more time perhaps or have a little less pressure on them to really think about iterating on that design were they not required to have it done within some, existing deadline because, mm-hmm. This thing's supposed to be delivered in July of 2023 or whatever. And realistically they know it's probably not going to happen till 6 months later than that, but still, they're still looking at a deadline. So
yeah.
Just kind of like designing at their own pace or whatever.
Yeah.
And again, we are not designers, so we don't know exactly how much this affects, the pressure put on the game designers who are having to do game design for expansions for games in these two different situations,
yeah.
Crowdfunding versus non-crowdfunded.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, just sitting here imagining it, you can imagine it being feeling a little bit more pressured and maybe like a little bit more rushed if you're having to do it for a crowdfunding project.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. And this is something that just sort of occurred to me just following off of this discussion is that I feel like that this kind of cycle that we're talking about it also maybe has shifted the focus of Kickstarter. And I keep using Kickstarter here as like a placeholder for any kind of crowdfunding engine. So this isn't just about Kickstarter, but so the sort of caveat there. But so I think, this kind of cycle where it's like, yeah, we need to crank out these things and they need to have this, that, and the other thing in order to be an attractive seller. And so it leads to all this kind of like product bloat and things like that. That I think is sort of beneficial for maybe larger game companies like CMON, or even these days, people like Jamie Stigmeier or whoever else,
Stonemeyer Games,
Stonemeyer.
Make Wingspan and
right, yeah,
Scythe,
right? People that and companies where it's no longer about sort of funding innovation, but getting out a completed product, and because those things are now on that marketplace, the sort of non-established, just trying to get a foot in the door, mm-hmm. kind of people are getting pushed out, Or they're, you know, they're not getting the attention that maybe they were intended to have with this platform.
Yeah. I think that the smaller, lesser known designers are probably still, if they have a cool product, a lot of them are getting their products funded, right? But what might have been, you know, the next Gloomhaven, because Gloomhaven first funded in like 2015 or 2016 or something like that, right? I mean, it's like $1 million Kickstarter, whatever. Yeah. But like nobody knew who Isaac Childress was when that game came out. Nobody knew what Gloomhaven was when that game came out. But it was the biggest deal in the world, right? Mm-hmm. But as Kickstarter has become increasingly crowded, and like you were just saying, crowded with bigger and bigger names too, right? Who are using it as a pre-order website, right?
Right.
Then the next Isaac Childress will not make $1 million, right? Like that, the next one's going to make $100,000 or $500,000 or something like that, right? And,
yeah.
And well, that's still a lot of money. It means that the new up and comers are probably going to have more and more limited success over time.
Yeah, I imagine so. So, like, I was just reading, I think that, like, I think Exploding Kittens was one of the first crowdfunded games that, like, did really, really well.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, if somebody were proposing Exploding Kittens now.
Yeah.
If it would have done as well.
No, probably not. Yeah, I mean, that it would look like just some, you know, also ran card game. We've seen a million of. Yeah. And it would, you know, it would fund $20,000 or something like that.
And I'm a fan of Exploding Kittens. I think it's kind of fun.
Sure. I mean that, you know, the point though is that it was novel when it came out.
Right. Yeah.
And now it would just be one of, like, I don't know, hundreds of games that look like that. I mean, like, just think about Cards Against Humanity, how many of those there are now, right? So
for sure, yeah,
we've just seen so many clones of so many things, and I don't know, like, it, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm guilty of that myself too. Like, I think it has changed my expectation of what I want out of these things, so that when I look at a campaign, a crowdfunding campaign, one of the first things I'm thinking when I look at it is not, oh, is this a cool game? It's, oh, what comes with the buy-in price?
Yeah.
And if it's just a card game, like, that automatically, like, this is stupid and shouldn't be this way. And I realize that intellectually. But again, when you're faced with all these sort of like slick marketing campaigns that go on for, you know, forever with all these extra things you're getting versus, you know, you're getting a card game, it's kind of hard to, you know, get out of that mindset.
I've been backing fewer games in the last, let's say, 6 months or so than I had in the prior years.
Yeah,
I went through a major phase, say, between like 2018 and like 2021, where I backed a lot of stuff, right? But now it's like I'm going in, and the questions I'm asking myself, and I think this is helping to kind of like slow down, hit the brakes on the actual like trigger pulling for backing the games. The first thing I ask myself is, what kind of game is this? Like, I might see something that looks like a dungeon crawly, you know, RPG type fantasy game. I'm gonna say, is that what it is, right? Like, what kind of game is this? And then once I'm looking at it and I've kind of sussed out what kind of game it is, the next question I ask myself is, what does this game look like it does that the other games that I have don't do, right? Yeah, or does it better or whatever, right? Like, what makes this game special compared to other similar games? Sometimes the answer is this game isn't similar to any other game that you've got in your collection. And that actually is like, that kind of like goes back to the original usefulness of crowdfunding, right? And I mean, that might be a reason to then be excited about backing a game, is because this looks really unique and special and like something that I would otherwise not have a chance to, you know, like play a game that is similar to this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or, you know, you get something which just like, okay, yeah, I kind of like this kind of a dungeon crawler, but I wish it did more of this or that, you know, and this game does, it's saying it's going to do that. So I guess I'll back it. But I mean, like, that's what's helped me kind of slow down, is because so many of these games just kind of look like, you know, like barely changed carbon copies of many other games. And they're starting to, I mean, the landscape is so crowded now that it's difficult to make something that really does look unique and sound unique. And so there's fewer reasons to back, you know, everything out there. So I don't know, that's kind of been my experience recently.
Yeah.
That said, I mean, I've still received a lot of kickstarted games or crowdfunded games. And even though we're being like, you know, largely critical of the platform and largely critical of the practice and kind of its effect on our perspective and its effect on how games are published and delivered and everything, you know, I still got to say, like, at least half of the games that I've gotten that are like my new favorite games in the last several years are probably from crowdfunding sources.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I certainly have games that I've gotten from crowdfunded websites that I love.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of the games that are like among my favorite games now, like Kingdom Death, like Too Many Bones, right? Like those were both crowdfunded games, you know?
Yeah.
Some of the games that we've played in the last year or so that we've been really hot on, like the second edition of Kemet was a crowdfunded game. Did it need to be? I mean, it was coming from Matagot, which I believe is owned by Asmodee, right? So, I mean, like, did it need to be crowdfunded? We don't know, right?
Right.
Maybe they were not willing to invest in a second edition of that game, but I'm glad it got made because I like that edition better.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of fun with that, right? Like, same thing with Eclipse. Eclipse came out with a second edition, and it's really, really awesome, right?
That's a lot of fun, too. Yeah, you like the game
one? Yeah. And so, I mean, I just received in the mail yesterday Spires and Hildegard, which is like a little solo card-based dice rolling game. It's sort of like a choose-your-own-adventure thing. It's a sequel to Spire's End, which is another same deal, like card game that I've got. And I mean, both of those games probably would not have come out of a major publisher, but I really enjoy sitting down and engaging with those games as like a solo game, right? Like that's something that would not exist otherwise. So Kickstarter and other crowdfunding sources are still doing what we want them to do. It's just that it's become a lot murkier, I think, than it was you know, 10, 7, 8 years ago.
I mean, I think there is kind of like a, I mean, there's a lot of, well, I don't know a lot, but one upside that I can see of this is that even if the board game product, you know, itself, you know, as a game, the game component of the product is, you know, lackluster or, you know, a repetition of something that you have or whatever else, in a lot of cases, like the thing that's selling the game might not actually be the game, but the stuff that comes with it, as we've said, and the stuff that comes with it, it's pretty darn cool. And I think that the artists that are involved in like sculpting the minis, for example, or doing the artwork for the cards or the board or whatever, the exposure that those artists get through something like a crowdfunding campaign, I think is really beneficial for them.
Yeah, that's true. I'm like, you know, good on all the sculptors and artists that worked on that Bloodborne game that I got that had like a million minis and stuff that I then sold because I was pretty disappointed in the game.
Yeah, but the minis looked amazing.
They were really cool minis. Yeah, so hopefully those people got some more work because they did a great job. But that game, but I mean, that's an example of, you know, like I of being disappointed with this process, of being burned by the process, because that was a CMON game, and that was a game that took a IP, Bloodborne, that I happen to have, like, a bit of affinity for. Like, I, you know, played through that game and really loved it and everything. Mm-hmm. The video game, I mean, on the PlayStation. And so I was pretty excited to get that game, and it finally came, and the game was mediocre and taking up a lot of space in my house, you know? and that's where you suddenly like fall to sort of like the pitfalls and the traps of a Kickstarter like that, a big campaign, a majorly overly produced campaign. If it turns out to not be a great game that you need a lot of content for because you want to play it like in perpetuity, and I feel like most games aren't that, right?
Right.
I don't need 3 expansion boxes and 100 different characters to choose from for most of my games, but if I'm getting a CMON Kickstarter, that's what I'm getting, you know?
Yeah.
But I probably don't need that for any of those.
Right, for sure.
Like, the games that I can think of that like I need that much content for that I just never tire of, I can count on one hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the necessity of getting that out of Kickstarter, it's something that I think I want, but it turns out I don't.
You know, in some cases I've actually, when I go to get rid of a game like that, I usually like go through it and pick out like the minis or whatever that I really like. And I just keep the minis and get rid of the rest of it.
How do you get rid of the rest of it then? Do you tell people, I'm not going to give you this one mini because I really like it?
No, I just toss it.
You're just throwing stuff out?
Yeah, like if I can't se like if I'll first try and sell it on like eBay or something, and then if it doesn't sell, then I'll just toss it.
Wow. I've never tossed a game. That is not something that I've ever done.
I don't do it often, but once in a while.
I mean, I took a big pile of games one time and took it to Half Price Books and sold like a whole stack of games for like $20, which was like super cheap compared to how much I probably paid in total for all that stuff, which felt like throwing it away. But I, you know, like at least it was going somewhere. You know, I've also thought about taking games that I don't feel like dealing with selling or shipping or anything because it's just such a pain in the
It
butt
is a pain,
sometimes. And I've thought about like just going and finding like a gaming club or something and being like, hey, will you take this donation? Or the library, like our
Oh, I've
library
done
has
that,
like
yeah.
board games. Yeah. So,
I've donated
you know,
games to people.
yeah. And I've given a lot away to friends or, you know, like friends of friends and stuff like that. So that's typically my method of getting rid of stuff is I will either sell it on, you know, eBay or like Facebook Marketplace or whatever. Anyway, this isn't a podcast about how we get rid of games. It just came up.
Mark
So
that down for another episode.
yeah, exactly. We'll do that next time. Brainstorm. It's when we LPT comes up with its own board game exchange site.
Hey, there's a way to make our millions.
There we go. But yeah, we're creeping up on a half hour.
We are.
Have we made all the points that we want to make about
I
this?
think so. I mean, I have. I don't know if there's any more that you have in mind.
I think I've pretty much covered everything. You know, I think that the main thing is like there's still value to be had with crowdfunding as long as what it's doing is bringing projects to life that would otherwise maybe not see the light of day. You know, I think that's where the real value always has been. And, you know, if were it not for crowdfunding, I wouldn't have Spirit Island. And I, you know, my life is better for that. I think a lot of people's lives are better for that. But for every Spirit Island, there's two or three Massive Darknesses.
Oh, massive darkness.
Yeah. So, there you go. All right. Well, if you enjoyed this new format of us just kind of discussing a topic rather than reviewing a specific game, we would love to know how would they let us know their opinion on this topic, Jason?
If you have opinions and you want other people to know about them, then you can email us. It's podcast@limitedplaytime.com. You can go to the website limitedplaytime.com. You can tweet us at Limited Playtime or Instagram at Limited Playtime Podcast.
That is right. We intend to still trying. Trying to speak on podcast.
I speak good.
Perhaps within several weeks. We've had several setbacks in the last few weeks, but we will hopefully be back in 2 to 3 weeks, like we were doing prior to this long month-long gap between episodes. So keep your eye out on your podcast feed, and hopefully we'll see you then.
Later.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.